Hello, everybody. It's Wednesday night at 8 p.m. This is Brian Powers, and this is New Jersey Revolution Radio Live. My banner just fell down in the background. There's tape in the back of my car that you can go get. My show assistant is right here. I got like a whole staff around me, and y'all don't realize what we go through here at New Jersey Revolution Radio as we try to be workers and working class people running a podcast and a media company. But thank God I got helpers around, and some of them are my kids, so there you go. And he's running up the tape, so I'll put the banner back up in a minute. And Daryl Lamont Jenkins will be joining us very shortly here as my co-host. You can see another one here is joining us tonight. Hi, what's up, buddy? Pizza's here, so thank you very much for telling us that my dinner is here. Actually, Daryl Lamont Jenkins is here. I see you, brother. I see you in the studio. So the show has made it just in the nick of time here as we do every Wednesday at 8 p.m. On YouTube, Twitter, or Facebook Live. We appreciate everybody sharing out right now. If you've got a social media account, if you're in the background of the studio, retweet us out, share us on Facebook, let people know we're live on YouTube right now. We appreciate the comments from our studio audience, and I hope to have, you know, some good discussion and some fun discussion as well, some really serious discussion about the U.S. Postal Service, which has been in the news a lot lately, and it made me think of a comrade. And every time I see something on the news, something I see, you know, as I look to what we're going to talk about in the show coming up, it always brings back memories of all the activists I've ran into in the past. And I never really fail to find somebody awesome that I've bumped into. And Nora Taggart, who's worked with unions, grassroots activist groups, and herself is a postal worker who drives a forklift truck. I can't wait to have a discussion with her about what's going on in the postal workers, you know, kind of world these days. Leah is back. We got to say hi to Leah. Let's say hi to Leah. Is back. Our show. Hi. Right. Hi, Leah. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good, good. So how did you enjoy vacation? Was it a good vacation? Did you go anywhere? Was it a staycation?
It was really fun. I got to drive around. This is like the first year my brother had his car up there. But one of the bad things was my scooter got hit. My wheelchair got hit by a car, so it's out of commission. Besides that, it was a great vacation.
Were you in it when it got hit?
No, luckily I was in the car. We had gone back because we forgot it, and then as we were backing in, it just happened, and it was awful.
Well, I'm glad you're safe. Scooters and those things can be repaired as long as you are okay. I'm glad.
Yes, that's what we've been saying. Like, everyone was kind of gutting down about it, and I was saying, guys, property can be replaced. No one got hurt. That's what's important.
I'm glad that you're back. And as some of you know, Leah comes here every week, writes for the show, works in the background, does a little bit of media and marketing work for us. And I really do appreciate it. Your donations, which you can make at njrevolutionradio.com, go to supporting her and her labor and her work. I mean, she works very hard, and she does it mostly out of love, but also because she's a young woman who needs to be a part of this movement going forward. So donations support her and her work. So thanks a lot, Leah. I'm glad to have you back. I'm looking forward to the next couple of weeks of show. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So let's now bring in. So we got Leah. Gotta remove her. I gotta click the right buttons. I feel rusty. I don't know why I feel rusty, but I do feel rusty. These shows, I've been doing a lot of work during the week. So I feel a little rusty clicking the buttons and switching into podcast producer mode. How are you, Daryl Lamont Jenkins?
Yeah, what's up?
Hi, Vox. Thank you very much for joining us on the stream. How you feeling, man, first off?
Actually, with the exception of that cough, I still got to take my meds, but I'm sitting there rushing around today because I actually came back from a doctor's appointment. And then I had to rush over here to the Sanctum Sanctorum of One People's Project. And I'm doing all right. I mean, basically, I had a little bit of a scare, as some folks might know. I mean, I wasn't feeling I was doing, I mean, on Facebook, if anybody follows me on Facebook, every day since the Memorial Day weekend, I have been doing these so-called walks and talks. And basically, that's me just trying to get some exercise in. I have been losing weight, so it's a good thing.
Yeah, man.
But at some point, I felt that I might have been losing my life. So I wanted to go to the doctor's office, just, I mean, go to the ER, because I started feeling a little queasy during one of the walks, because I live stream. And I figured, yeah, let me go check and see and make sure that everything is okay. Now, see, the fact is I haven't been on my meds for about a year and a half, my blood pressure meds.
Were you supposed to be off your meds for a year and a half, or you just... like the most.
No, I'm not supposed to be off my meds for a year and a half, but I also didn't have any insurance for that year and a half either. So I knew what was going to happen as soon as I walked into that ER. They saw that blood pressure go up and I was staying. So they checked me out, make sure everything was okay. I have no clogged arteries or anything like that. And I was out of the, hospital by, I went in on Sunday the 9th. And I got out on the 11th, and it was funny because it's like the following week was like my fourth anniversary of when I had the surgery for the prostate cancer. So
yeah,
like 2020 is mirroring 2016 in so many ways that I'm really scared about November. So.
I think we'll get into a little bit of that discussion and what we're looking forward to in November.
Yeah, I'm sitting here. I got the TV on over here. They're looking at the Republican convention. I'm keeping an eye on the Republican convention, I should say. And I have to apologize because in about a minute I got to go grab a bottle of water because that's to deal with my cough. But I want to keep an eye out on. Who shows up, who's going to be talking, and what are they going to be saying? Obviously, while we're doing the show, okay. I'm not able to hear, and my closed caption is not working. So I'm happy.
It never does. Go get your bottle of water while I rant on a little bit about the DNC and the RNC, because I know we're going to focus on the RNC and like the behind the scenes and the supremacist work. But I kind of look, I made a commitment in life to not pay attention to bourgeois politics as much in life. I don't care about it as much. I find it to have little relevance to my own personal life and little relevance to workers' lives in general. I'd much prefer to work with comrades who are poor. I find I have much better discussions with drug addicts and homeless people than I do with politicians. And so, you know, I've kind of taken this very grassroots approach, and you yourself do mostly grassroots work. Your work is really not electoral, but behind these and why I have that attitude is behind these facades of democracy, we have real both good and bad activity, right? I think we have people trying to influence the system for positive reasons, but we also have people influence the system for negative reasons. And you focused your work a little bit, I guess, on the pretty, you know, the violent and racist elements that kind of seep below the surface here, you know?
Well, I think I do with the most extreme, because you don't necessarily have to be violent to be destructive, you know. I mean, and that's one of the reasons why I monitor mainstream politics. Mainstream politics is basically like the canary in the coal mine for me, you know. I mean, I think that a lot of what we do is all indicative of what we do in these streets, is what we do in our day to day when we go to work, when we go to school, and all that. It's those folks that are gonna push the needle forward. However, the way they are pushing the needle forward is by influencing those folks that we put into power or some whatever you want to call it. It's important to follow what it is they're doing and how it is they're doing things, so we know what we need to do to make sure that if they're doing right, let it go. If they're doing wrong, don't. Like right now, one of the issues that we have going forward, and I brought this up when I was on MSNBC this Saturday, the fact that this QAnon, you know what, ladies and gentlemen, if you guys are going to talk about QAnon, say it for what it is. QAnon is Jewish blood libel. Basically,
what QAnon is. What is that? Get into, for those of us in our audience, because I've heard of QAnon and I know you talk about them quite a bit. Honestly, I don't think I've delved too far into what QAnon is enough. Just expound on that for a minute for us.
Okay, basically what it is this thing that just came up out of nowhere in as of recent years. I mean, we've been so used to the conspiracy theories that we have seen with Alex Jones and with other various knuckleheads on the internet for the past, I don't know, past 10, 20 years. The sad thing about it is that back in the day, they had a little bit more relevance because they had their people in place, but they lost their people and folks are seeing them for who they are. QAnon is the extreme of conspiracy theories. They have this idea, they have this game that they're supposed to be a cabal of Satan-worshipping pedophiles. They're running an international child sex trafficking ring that is plotting against Donald Trump.
Are they the pizza shop people?
It comes sort of out of that.
Sorry, I'm just sitting down for my demon dinner here.
Your demon dinner, yes, yes, yes. You're eating pedophile pizza.
Yeah, right here in New Jersey. Best pizza in the world for those of you watching
online. I can't eat that, by the way. I can't have any because one of the things that my doctor told me, three things I can't eat. No caffeine, no tomato, and no chocolate. Now that's rough because I'm already chocolate. So it's gonna be tough to try to stay true to that. But I'm gonna do the
attempt to me. I was working on a roof all day and I didn't get a chance to eat, so I'm gonna eat during the show, which I do quite frequently if you're watching on the live stream. But if you're on the podcast, you'll never know it because I have amazing co-hosts to fill the gaps.
Let me finish the QAnon thing though. Let me make sure everybody understands what it is. So you know, you got the you got this crew that is run that is supposed to be this anonymous dude that's in high ends of government, and he calls himself Q. And it's unfortunate that he calls himself Q because the only time I think of somebody named Q, I'm thinking James Bond. Now they're messing that up for me. So this guy's supposed to have access to classified information that says that Trump is fighting this global child sex trafficking ring of Satan worshiping pedophiles who is trying to stop Donald Trump. And here's the thing, number one, we don't need a plot to take down Donald Trump. We're going to take down Donald Trump. I mean, no one likes him except a bunch of assholes. You know, let's just be real. and they just got, they really just got lucky the last time around. And this time that I don't think they're going to be as lucky because regardless of how you might feel about Biden or Harris, they're better candidates than Clinton. They are. Biden knows how to play this game. He's been in it for too long. I'm not talking about endorsing him. I'm not talking about liking him. I'm just talking about how it is. And he's not going to lose Pennsylvania. I mean, This is one of the reasons why I follow Main Street Politics, because you got to figure out what the climate is that you're going to be working in.
I have no faith in numbers after the election, the last election. I have no faith in predictions because
neither do I. I'm just going by the conventional wisdom. Yeah. It's going by strictly the conventional wisdom, as we know from 4 years ago.
But listen, conventional wisdom would dictate there's no fucking way we would make a mentally ill game show host the most powerful man on the face of the earth.
Yes, it happened. Yes, you do have to recognize that. Thing is, that doesn't mean it's going to happen again. Now, it could, and we just have to be prepared for it. And the reason why, and one of the things that we have to be prepared for is that these clowns that are calling themselves QAnon talking about how these Satan-worshipping pedophiles are supposed to be eating children. I mean, that's when that comes up. And when you start talking about the whole eating children stuff, then you start recognizing a few things from the blood libel stuff that they said about Jews back in the day. I mean, that's when you start saying, oh, what do we have here? And now they got for those who don't know what the blood libel is, that's basically accusing Jews of murdering Christian children in order to use their blood as part of religious rituals. They say that about the folks that are supposed to be in the Satan worshiping cabal of pedophiles.
That is some crazy stuff. Now so let's get back to the RNC though. So now I think on most years, right, and even leading up to this, man, we have plans. You would be there. We would have people there.
Oh, man.
There would be people, you know, on the convention floor getting back to us and letting us know what's going on. But here in the year of COVID, like, it fucked up everything else in life. It fucked up our plans to monitor this convention and kind of keep an eye on the activity. But you're still able to look online, right? And we're still able to
We're still able to look online. We can even, I mean, I was hoping that at some point we was going to be able to arrange things so we can have it streaming. Basically, we was going to have an ongoing podcast that was going to take place during both conventions.
This country is still going to be fucked up.
We're going to have people on the ground during the demos, which would have been insane considering what's been going on in the past couple of months. Right. And instead, we're sitting here watching it on TV just like everybody else.
Hey, you know what, man? This country's still going to be fucked up in 4 years. You and I will get...
It depends on us.
You will... It does depend on us. Hopefully, it'll be less fucked up.
You know, I mean, I hate to say that. I mean, you know me. I am ever the optimist. I would always... And the reason why I'm always the optimist is because it really does depend on what it is we do as a people, what it is we do as a society. I'm not going to say it's fucked up. You know why I'm not going to say it's fucked up? Because there's a whole bunch of people out there right now in those streets trying to unfuck everything.
That's true. Know?
And the fact of the matter is, they're going to put their time in. They're going to put in work. I think we need to start valuing their work. I mean, I haven't been out there as much as I wanted to over the past couple of months, simply because I've been so caught up with one thing or another. I haven't been well. And you know, I mean, it's frustrating that I haven't been out there. I want to try to go to DC this weekend, but it might rain. We might have to deal with the remnants of the Hurricane Laura.
Yeah, I appreciate your defense of the activist community and the positive work going on. It's duly noted. I mean, but I wouldn't. I mean, look, your work carries over even when you're sick, man. I mean, you know, your exposure of these groups and your education, man. It's always there. You can take some time off and get healthy, man.
Nah, DLJ don't take time off. See, this is all DLJ does. What am I going to do when I take time off? Play Candy Crush all day?
You know, Candy Crush might not be a bad thing for us every once in a while.
I mean, I do my Candy Crush.
I'm glad to have you back in action, man. I'm glad to have you co-hosting the show with us. I got to do, you know, I got to ask, so what do you see, like, from these communities online? As far as online activity, so from a white power, if I'm a dumbass and I'm in these white power groups, I've seen, like, the Klan endorse Donald Trump. The crowd not endorsed Donald Trump, which I'm not even sure if he rejected, like, out and out. I think he did after some pressure, but at first he was like, thanks a little bit. You know, I mean, it was really like this kind of like, you really shouldn't accept this Klan endorsement. And he thought about it for a while and then decided. But like, I mean, and then I've seen other groups that are like, he's not extreme enough and he hasn't created concentration camps for everybody except white people. What do you think, like, how dangerous is the elements of, like, the more, even more extreme than Donald Trump? Let's say the people that don't think Donald Trump is right enough.
But that was the other thing I said when I was on TV the other day. I say, hey, look, I mean, regardless of what happens in November, we still have to deal with his crowd. We still have to deal with his people. And his people are out there killing people. We just dealt with this guy. We have to deal with not only the guy that killed two people in Kenosha, yep, Wisconsin, yes, last night, but also, and he had the audacity to go home. He was so comfortable. He had the audacity to go home. But we also have to deal with the fact, to that point, that there's been a series of other murders, other people getting killed in various parts of the country, or attacked in various parts of the country, with the police just looking at the people doing it and just going, c'est la vie. And I'm like, no, you cannot do that. I mean, we cannot allow that. And I was talking with an attorney before I came on. Now, look, we don't rely on the police for obvious reasons. Having said that, they still must be held accountable. They are being paid to protect us. And if they're not doing that, well, that kind of validates everything that we're saying. And when people are getting killed by vigilantes and by pseudo patriots and stuff like that, and the police just look the other way or augment them, then we definitely have to make note of that. And that's what's been going on over the past couple of months. That's what we've been seeing. Now, I was talking with an attorney, and he said that, look, it's tough to try to convince a court to compel police to do things in situations that they are saying is dangerous. You don't want to do that as a rule. So it'll be hard to deal with things that way. That's why the police constantly get away with not doing things when you think that they otherwise should be. So our next approach to things is we got to start protecting ourselves. We got to start dealing with things ourselves. The Proud Boys didn't get stopped by the police in Kalamazoo or in Portland. They got stopped by us. They were told to leave by us.
You mentioned Kenosha and Wisconsin, and this young man, Jacob Blake, whose children saw him shot in the back by police. I've seen
right.
Disturbing. I don't even think he was involved in the conflict. He was apparently there trying to, solve a conflict, and then wound up getting involved in this. And you know, again, we're seeing uprisings. We're seeing the Department of Corrections buildings got torched. I got to be honest with you. It doesn't really bother me a lot. No human life was lost, apparently, in that. And so I don't consider that violence. I'm not really opposed to burning down facilities the corrections departments run. But, certainly it's disturbing seeing people that angry, right? People that are that hell-bent on destruction of anything. Because they're that angry in a community. It doesn't happen with one. Unfortunately, you know, to say that this man's life and this man, what this man's children witnessed, this man, Jacob Blake, isn't a traumatic experience for everybody who is involved. But things like this, uprisings and destruction of things like this, don't really happen because of one incident. Right. It won't happen.
No.
And what I guess, you know, what I got to ask you is, as you know, as one of the people that have pioneered this, Antifa and your activities here in the United States, when you see people blaming us and people using Black Bloc, and I saw a particular video on Facebook of people smashing up cars, and they were, of course, you know, pointing to the organization whose flag you have right behind you there, anti-fascist organizations as being responsible. Yeah, I mean, we are, as anti-fascists, being held responsible for some of this destruction and loss of.
Of course.
Hey, what do you have to say about that? One, do you have any evidence that these are people associated with our activities?
Well, my feeling is, you want to make it like water off a duck, to be honest, because this is what they do, and I think I brought it up to you before. I mean, you basically have a right wing that will demonize anybody going after them. And you have a liberal circle that actually promotes it too. I mean, it's like they get their talking points from from Fox News, their damn selves, because while Fox News will call us terrorists or whatever, you have the liberal circle sitting there going, well, you guys are a little harsh. Or some nonsense like that. I mean, they do it. They always wait. They never say anything until we start making moves. You don't see them talking much about about what the violent right is doing right now. You don't see them complaining about the shootings, with the exception of this one in Kenosha, or the attacks from the Proud Boys. But I guarantee, if one of us. Killed one of them in self-defense, you'll start hearing the liberals start screaming and hollering about, it all just needs to stop. It needs to stop now, before there is more loss of life, you know. That's what people are in the streets, because there is lost life at the hands of those that are supposed to protect us. It needs to stop now. And that's why, to the point somebody mentions in the comments, why the NBA is on strike right now, why the NBA is boycotting today. So, I mean, there was supposed to be a number of games today, first ones to give it up is the Milwaukee Bucks, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Just on general principle, they felt the need to. And now all the other teams are following suit.
You know what we call that in the labor world? And I want to see a smile backstage from my upcoming guest here, because that's what we call a wildcat strike. That's what we call a wildcat. That's when there's a contract in place, you're supposed to go to work, and you say, fuck it anyway. I don't like this shit. I ain't going to work. And it's a great thing to see. We'll see how it spreads. I know that, like you said, the Bucks basically walked off the job last night. Basically said, no, we're not going to play because of what's going on. And, you know, that it's spreading is news to me. I did see that when I was preparing. And there's a lot more to talk about in Wisconsin and just in around the world. And as always, I think we're cutting things short before we talk about everything. What else is new? We have to talk about getting money. And we get that through sponsorship. So if you would like to sponsor New Jersey Revolution Radio, of course, you can always, email us info@njrevolutionradio.com or contact us through the Facebook page or one of the social media networks and we'll get back to you. You can sponsor it. We need like $25. We'll stick your name, 10, 25 bucks, whatever. We'll stick your name up on the broadcast. We'll stream you. And for a little more money, I'll talk about you like I'm about to talk about the August agency. The August agency does QuickBooks accounting. They do QuickBooks accounting, other kinds of accounting, and a whole bunch more to do with financials. When I have something to do with money, I call Charlie over at the August agency. His number is 201-895-7227. That's 201-895-7227. And you can get them online as well as www.theaugustagency.biz. We'll give Daryl's organizations a plug while we're here. One People's Project, right? Tell us about One People's Project real quick.
One People's Project is an online. It's not online. It's just more than just online. But it's a resource for those that are trying to get a handle of who's who and what's what. In the white power in the far right scene. I mean, basically what we do is monitor research and report on right-wing groups and individuals, and we encourage communities to be proactive against them, to diminish their ability to function, as we would say. We have our a news line. You can find us, you can find One People's Project at onepeoplesproject.com. You can also find us on Twitter, you can get and Facebook. And also on Newsline, idavox.com, idavox.com. And you could also find me on Twitter at D. Lamont Jenkins. And I'm also, One People's Project is a coalition member of a group that calls itself the International Anarchist Unity Coalition. And I call it the AUC because I want to try to avoid calling it the Anti-Fascist Unity Coalition, AFUC, as we kind of like say behind the scenes, but I gotta keep from doing that because I'm on TV a lot and I don't want to accidentally use that.
It's the best acronym in acronym. It's the best acronym.
I call it the AUC. But the AUC is actually trying to, we're right now in the process of trying to get a food drive going. The only thing that's really stopping us right now is the fact that we just don't have the website rolling as well as we want to. But we are accepting donations. We are accepting, because what we're going to be doing, we're trying to benefit a number of food banks and pantries that have been devastated by the pandemic, trying to help everybody out. And we feel, yo, it's time to help them out. So if you go to our to the International Anti-Fascist Days of Unity website, Facebook page, you can learn a little bit more about that. Our website is daysofunity.org, and we are going to it's a little bare bones right now, but we'll get it together hopefully rather quickly over the next couple of days, because we like to really have it going by September, because the holidays are coming up. And those food banks need that food during the holiday season. I know we always like to wait until the holidays to start thinking about these kinds of things. We want to try to avoid that in the future, but here we are. So, and it's going to be even more incumbent upon us to start helping these institutions out, whether you're talking about your mutual aid groups, where you're talking about the pantries, where you're talking about food banks. Food Bombs needs help. They're always out there every damn day. So, yeah, that's a... Let's start seeing if we can do our thing out there. So
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for all your work, man. Thanks for being here and supporting New Jersey Revolution Radio, man. It means a lot to me that you come on here and help us out, you know, for a little time. It's valuable. I know your time is valuable. You're going to hate this next segment, by the way. I just ate pizza in front of you, and now I'm going to do something else. You're going to yell at me for it. Your family doesn't watch the show, does it, right? You're good?
No, my family doesn't watch the show. They usually don't get involved in my politics all that much. So.
Good. All right. So I name things, and I think I've pondered on the air before. Why do I name things? And I actually did some research in tonight. There's three reasons. There's three psychological reasons why people name things. One, it has to be a non-human thing that has a face. And the thing we're naming tonight does not have a face. As you can see, this doesn't look like a human being. So that's not why I name things. It also could be because we want to explain its unpredictable behavior. I can predict what happens when I use this thing very, very well. All right. Or the other thing, the last thing is we want to be friends with it. And I think this is very true. This is why I name all my bongs. I name all my water pipes. I name all my little tools that I use for playing with my weed. It's probably not a great sign for my overall mental health. No, but it is. It is. And I'm asking my audience tonight to suggest names for my new bong. I had a bong before. His name was Trevor. He was small. He was very tough. I took him everywhere. He was glass bongs, my glass travel bong. So they're a little small. And unfortunately, I dropped Trevor the other day. And there was, I mean, when it hit the ground, it was in a bag. When it hit the ground and you just heard it and a million pieces. Trevor is gone. He served me well for a number of years. But you know, when you develop relationships with glass bongs, it always ends. They never last forever. Right. You know, at some point you're going to drop it or bump it or tick it wrong. So I went to the shop. I went to the store. I got myself a new red, of course, a red bong. So if you have a name and you'd like to help me name my new bong, I would really appreciate you either commenting on the stream or commenting on, you know, Twitter or whatever. And maybe next week I'll get back to you with the suggestion that I take. I ain't letting red you. Rider. What's that?
Red Rider. The Red Scare. Red Rider
isn't bad.
The Red Scare.
That's a good one. A Red Scare. I'm gonna write that one down.
Yeah.
All right, let's do a serious interview now though. Okay. So I'm gonna talk a little bit with Nora Taggart, and Daryl is of course gonna jump in because you know something really important happening out there that's been in the news a lot lately. And as I said, you know, I thought back to activists that I've met and spoken with in the past. Nora and I probably met through social media. I don't even really remember how, but we have some mutual friends in the activist world. And I always like to talk a little bit about a personal story. We had dinner and went and saw Shama Sawant and Chris Hedges speak in New York City. You gave me a great book, which I did read and got inspired from. You know, you've done a lot of work. I mean, you've been active in your union, and I'll let you give most of your bio. But I know that, you know, as part of our friendship, at the time you were the political and legislative director at New Jersey, New York Metro Postal Union. I got that right, right?
Yes.
And Nora,
New York.
And Nora runs into this ragtag crew of activists and students trying to make something happen for a $15 an hour minimum wage in New Jersey. And brought me to New York, and I got to speak with your executive board and talk to them about our efforts. And they gave us some money. They gave us two donations over the course of a year of about $500 each. I think it was $500 each. They gave us like $1,000. And it really was, when you got that small of an organization, it's that trying to make, you know, just something happen. That much money was like huge. It like gave us money for a year of website hosting and all kinds of stuff. And so, you know, when you got involved with your union, you know, you bridged the gap. You really bridged the divide between activism, the left, the anti-capitalist left, and, you know, some establishment union power and money and influence. And it was always appreciated. And I thank you for joining us tonight to talk about what's going on in your workplace, the Postal Union. How are you?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me here today.
I appreciate it. So let's start off with, what's it like at work? I mean, you go in every day. I mean, tell us a little bit about like what you do on a daily basis as a postal worker. How do you help our mail move?
So the Postal Service employs like 630,000 people. We are the second or third largest employer in the country. Civilians, I think maybe Walmart and Amazon are bigger employers than the U.S. Postal Service, with the exception that we are union. Therefore, we do make a living wage. We support our communities. And unlike Walmart and Amazon workers that are minimum wage and they rely on taxpayers to for food stamps and all other assistance because Walmart and Amazon do not pay their employees living wages. Also, the Postal Service is the largest employer of veterans. It's about 40% of the workforce are women. Women make the same money as men, which is unheard of in the private industry. We are a very diverse workforce. I think it's like 39% people of color, and it's an awesome place to work. And we provide a great service for the country, so it's amazing.
You do. And in our lead up to this little pre-interview where I was asking, you know, are you still involved with the union and you're not an officer currently? And you said, I'm just a postal worker. And I snapped at you.
I'm very proud of being a postal worker.
Yeah, damn straight. Not in what Nora didn't mention is she's a forklift driver. I mean, you are not the bourgeoisie politician, union boss that walks around. You get on a forklift every day and you make sure mail gets from one place to another. And without 650,000 of people like you doing that work every day, we don't really have a functioning society. You know, I mean, and when I think of the history of the postal union, I mean, that's the backbone of the American Revolution. It really is how communications happen between states and how we ultimately freed ourselves from the oppression of the British. And ultimately, and we still, that doesn't mean we still don't have a shit ton of oppression going on. You know, what's your, so over the last, let's say, 6 months, as this political turmoil has happened, have you seen changes in the shops, in the morale, in the material conditions? What have you seen as the reaction to kind of the Trump administration over the last year or so as they've kind of borne down the focus on your workplace?
Well, for decades, I believe since the 70s, there's been a big push to privatize the Postal Service. It's been bipartisan. When the pandemic hit, I work at the largest mail processing and sorting facility in the world. It's located in New Jersey. When the pandemic hit, I remember we were all scared. But we kept going to work because the mail volume just exploded. Everybody was ordering online. Everybody was scared to go out shopping. A lot of smaller shops closed. They depended on us to deliver their goods to stay afloat. I remember as a forklift driver unloading and loading pallets and pallets and pallets of hospital supplies, oxygen masks, and all that. So even though we were all scared to be there, well, some of our coworkers passed away. Others were very sick with COVID. At one point, 66% of our workers were absent due to COVID-related situations and quarantining, etc. We still continue to work. We were doing 14-hour. We work mostly nighttime because we process the mail for the mail for the carriers to deliver it during the daytime. We knew it was extremely important for people to get their medications, to get their foods, to get their supplies, to help small businesses, to help the hospitals get their supplies. So we kept pushing on. And it was very demoralizing when President Trump said we were a joke. And it's even more demoralizing when the banks were getting trillions of dollars and corporations were getting hundreds of billions of dollars in stimulus grants and forgivable loans. And yet here we are, the lifeline for the American people. We service every address in the country. And we haven't gotten one penny of COVID relief, nothing, even though we have not received any taxpayers' money since 1970. And it's all for political reasons, because there is an agenda. President Trump has been advocating for privatizing the Postal Service since he got into office. It's been in his budget since 2017.
I have a question right quick. Well, actually, I'm going to let Brian come in because Brian go back to that, because there is something that I wanted to ask in particular about that. Donald Trump and what's been going on. I mean, I was listening to Elizabeth Warren speaking on the recent problems with the post office, and the Joy's nonsense that's going on. And one of the things that is important to note, and she noted it, is that while I would say the Republicans have been trying to do this for a very long time. Problem is, they wanted to do it quietly. Trump has basically given away the store when it comes to this. But this goes back, I mean, I'm looking at Susan Collins' attempt at an overhaul just 14 years ago. So what is it? So has this been, and this is going to be weird to say, has the spotlight on what they're doing right now helped in any way to keep this BS from going on any further? Or is it really ratcheting things up right now?
So, yes, the privatization efforts have been ongoing for decades. That's true. It's been during the Clinton administration, we started outsourcing mail to private companies. So both parties are complicit in this. However, if you research like the Koch brothers and their attempts to abolish Social Security, Medicare, the Postal Service, the unions and all that, and you realize how vast and massive and powerful their network. I've heard, I know you're aware of the Koch brothers network with the think tanks and ALEC and all of that. So for decades, they've been putting a lot of their people in positions that oversee the Postal Service. For example, in the Postal Regulatory Commission, or the chairman, Robert Taub, he was instrumental in writing the law that was passed in 2006, the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act, that saddled the Postal Service to pre-fund future retirees' health benefits 75 years into the future. This is not about pensions. This is future retirees' health benefits. Our pensions have like $280 billion set aside. That's separate. So before that bill was passed, the post office was generating between $1 billion and $3 billion the years before that. They saddled us where we had to pay $5.5 billion a year for 10 years to prepay future retirees' health benefits for people who aren't even born yet. They haven't worked for the post office and they haven't even retired. So they did that, and they also saddled us with, we're not allowed to generate more revenue. So obviously it was setting us up for failure. Now comes COVID-19. We have all these people out of work. So most of us that were able to continue to work, we're working a lot of overtime, which has increased a lot of cost to the agency. It seems like all the planets have aligned. You have a president, people in the USPS Board of Governors, people in the Postal Regulatory Commission, you have a Republican-controlled Senate. They're all for privatizing the Postal Service, and we have a big battle ahead of us, not just to save the Postal Service because of the elections, but to save the Postal Service for generations to come.
Correct. And that's going.
No, go ahead, man.
No, that was what I was going to say is that has we've always talked about how the Postal Service was on life support right now. They've always said it's because of email and things like that. But the truth of the matter is, I use the Postal Service all the time. I use it to deliver packages, to get packages sent. I use it to send letters. Sometimes you need hard copy with some of the work that that a person does.
Boy. As a matter of fact, the post office supports a $1 trillion industry. We handle half the world's mail, not just the United States. We deliver to every rural home in America. And if we didn't exist, even FedEx and UPS cannot do their business without us. We deliver 30% of their packages for them, because if it's not profitable for them to deliver, they will not deliver. The mission of the Postal Service, actually the Postal Service was created because back then when this country was founded, in order for there to be a democracy, people had to be informed, the citizen, and we used to subsidize the newspaper. The mission of the Postal Service is to provide reliable, prompt, universal mail service to every address in the country. It's essential. If the post office stops running, the whole economy stops. 1.2 billion prescriptions are mailed through the Postal Service. People's lives literally depend on Postal Service because, for example, my parents live up in a mountain. UPS and FedEx do not go there. Veterans Administration sent my father all his medications and supplies through the U.S. Postal Service. And just like my parents, millions of other people depend on it. Right now, the U.S. Veterans Department is advising people to get their prescriptions ahead of time because since the new Postmaster General came in, all our mail is being delayed intentionally to make us look very bad to the American people, to demonize postal workers, to continue to defund us so that they can eventually just privatize us.
That's one of the reasons I asked whether or not the spotlight that's on the Postal Service has been a benefit to all your efforts to push back against that.
Because I think that the only reason or the big reason why the Democrats are pushing for these bills to support the post office is due to the public pressure, because the people do want to keep their post office. We are ranked 91% favorability. We are the most favored agency in the country. And they also did a study after COVID, which is the most trusted brand. And we competed against pharmaceuticals, Walmart, Amazon, FedEx, UPS. The Postal Service came out number one as the most trusted brand in America. The people really love postal workers. They love the post office. We are the face of the government in this country. We provide an essential service. And it would be a shame that this administration would use the coronavirus pandemic to destroy us. And the fact that they're trying to raise rates during a pandemic, when millions of people lost their jobs, they depend on us for so much. People that cannot leave their homes are depending on us to deliver their medicines, their foods, their goods. Small businesses are dependent on us because they can't open their stores to deliver their goods and stay afloat. It's really shocking that this administration is taking this crisis to pursue an ideological and political motive.
Are you really shocked? You're not shocked, are you, Nora? I mean, it's not shocking. Look, we've dedicated this country to the relentless pursuit of profit at all costs.
And profit before people.
I mean, look, we've privatized healthcare, we've privatized education, we've privatized prisons, we've privatized law enforcement, we've privatized parking lots, we've privatized everything. Because it is this idea that money is having money makes you a good person, and we can, you know, and so, you know, this is just another step in the process of breaking apart social fabric and things that are truly valuable to all of us, because some douchebag or a very small group of douchebags want to make a lot of money together. And luckily we got people like you. We got some solid unions. And I mean, listen, unions got their problems too. We're not going to beat up our own cause today. But, you know, look, the Postal Workers Union has done everything they can, I think, to form one of the better coalitions out there run by a union to try to draw people in, and not just draw people into their cause, but also to support other causes. You know, I talked at the beginning of this interview. So I'm looking at you, the U.S. Mail, or I'm going to say this website, usmailnotforsale.org. Is a website that's out right now. We'll take a look on our screen. Can you tell us a little bit about this website and the tools and the messaging that it brings as far as fighting back?
So we understand that the only way we're going to meet this, but we cannot grieve to save the post office. We cannot go through the grievance process. The only way that we can win this war is to get the American people to defend something that belongs to them and serves them. The American people do not pay any tax money into the Postal Service. The only way they pay is if you buy a stamp. But yet we go to your home 6 days a week. We deliver mail carriers. They notice when people are sick or they haven't picked up their mail in a few days, and they do well checks. And wherever there's a mail carrier in a city, in the neighborhood, it's proven that crime rate goes down during the time that the mailmen are walking their routes. And the fact that it employs so many people, it's the largest unionized workforce in the country. It's one of the reasons they want to destroy us also, because they can get people to do the same work we do for $10 an hour and then have CEOs make $20 million a year. So we have to support the Postal Service. It's a national treasure. It serves everybody. People that cannot afford to go to college, they can go work for the Postal Service, make a living wage, bring up children like we do. Like, I'm a single mom. I raised three children on my own thanks to having a living wage, thanks to having benefits from my union. So U.S. Mail is not for sale. Our website, and we're asking the people to contact their senators, because right now, even though the House passed a bill to provide $25 billion for COVID relief funds for the Postal Service, just like all the other corporations in, even foreign corporations got bailout money from the COVID relief.
Right.
We don't understand why the Post Office cannot get one penny, even though, and let me say something, that pre-funding money that the Post Office has been paying into, $5.5 billion a year, we've already put $50 billion towards people that haven't even been born yet. It's in the Treasury, and the U.S. Treasury uses that as a cash cow. We support, we're not a leech of the system. We support the U.S. Treasury, but when it comes push to shove, they have not given us a penny, but FedEx and UPS have been getting millions of dollars in grants and COVID relief money.
Mm-mm-mm. Just like Social Security and other funds, they're using it as a slush fund. I hate to run out of time, but Daryl, do you have a last question or last comment before we say goodbye?
Yes, I do. I want to ask, we've been talking about what Trump and DeJoy have been doing, but you did make the point that we have a problem with both parties.
Yes.
And my question is, should Trump lose, and we do have to get Biden in there, what should we be looking out for that may be a red flag to the rest of us that some things change and some things remain the same?
Well, during the Obama administration, they shut down 143 mail sorting facilities, including the one I was in. They reduced hours at post offices, where they closed down during lunchtime, or they only operate 2 or 4 hours a day, making it very inconvenient for people to go mail their parcels or whatever. And so Biden was part of the Obama administration. So it's a hard battle either way, but I think that we have a better chance at surviving under the Democrats than the Republicans. As Mo Biller used to say, the struggle continues. But I just think that the death sentence would allow us more time to fight and get more support from the public.
I think I'm going to keep putting my faith in you, my comrade, rather than any of those bourgeoisie that you just mentioned, because I think both parties have proven we can't trust them. And the solution's in people power, right? Solutions
people power, yes.
You and me and people that drive forklifts and Ubers and struggle as contractors on roofs.
Parking people, yes.
That's it. We're the solution, not any of them. I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's awesome. We got to catch up more. We definitely got to catch up and hang out more. I'd be excited to see you get back involved in the New Jersey scene, because you really are a force. You really got a great attitude towards everything that we do here as activists and as leaders. So check her out. If you see her at a protest, make sure you thank her for all her hard work, for not just the Postal Service, but for activists.
We support, our union is very active socially. We support Black Lives Matter. We support a lot of other. So we're very involved in social issues.
Always loved my interactions with you and all your comrades there. Daryl, you got any events or things you need to plug? I know I already let you say money, but anything else before we go? Just a reminder.
Just right now, I mean, the only thing I have coming up is they're going to be, you can see it on Idavox. on the sidebar. I'm going to be speaking about on the 31st during the Zoom conference. It's a public Zoom conference. Everybody should attend. I'm going to be talking in particular about fascists of color. And we're going to have some fun with that one.
I only got a couple of suggestions to name my bong. I do like the Red Menace. I really do. That's nice. I usually name them names, though. Usually I give them a name like Marx or Lenin or Pete or something like that. So, but I do like the Red Menace. I'll put that on the list. Didn't get many comments. But if you're listening on the podcast, send me an email, info@njrevolutionradio.com. Say, Brian, you should name your bong this and explain to me why. If you donate money, I'll consider your suggestion a little harder. You can make a donation at that same website, www.njrevolutionradio.com. The bourgeoisie are not supporting me. I need workers like you listening to support me. You know, a couple of bucks a month, 10, 25, 30 bucks. I've said before, it costs about 300 bucks to get a reporter out to an activist event. But none of my comrades have that kind of money. So you know what? If you chip in a little bit every month, they chip in a little bit at the event. They throw it in the hat. It makes a difference, and we're able to get out there and support your work. So thank you very much to those who have already donated. If you haven't, please do so. Until next week at 8 p.m., I'm going to come back to you live on YouTube, on Twitter, on Facebook, and wherever else I can figure it out. Till then, this is Brian Powers, and I want to remind all of you that the police can quit their jobs. Have a good night, everybody.